Imagine pulling the logs on your, million-dollar AI architecture and realizing that for the last 30 hours, it's just been staring at a blank wall.
Yeah, totally blind.
Right. And it hasn't crashed. There's no pager alert going off.
Yeah.
It's just been quietly, confidently hallucinating its entire reality.
Which is terrifying.
It really is. And all because of like one drop database column. So welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're looking at the exact moment a developer realized his AI was entirely locked out of its own brain.
Yeah, it's a fascinating case study.
We're opening up the audit files from version 1.0 in Maya 0. The date on these files is May 20, 2026.
And this is an incredibly ambitious project we're looking at.
Exactly. We are tracking the work of a Hungarian developer, Peti Markovits. He's currently on day 28 of a continuous public run of this self-improving personal AI vault stack.
Built on top of Claude Code, right?
Yep, built on Claude Code. And his vault now contains over, I think, 15,000 knowledge graph facts. But our mandate for today's deep dive is to keep it technical, candid, and this is the big rule, name the broken parts first.
Name the broken parts first. I love that. Zero marketing fluff.
Zero. It's kind of like opening up the hood of a pristine-looking race car only to find, duct tape and zip ties holding the engine together. It's fascinating because it's real. And understanding that duct tape is how you actually learn to build the engine yourself.
Which, honestly, is the only authentic way to evaluate these autonomous systems.
Yeah.
In modern continuous integration for AI, especially, when dealing with agents that autonomously read and write to databases, the most dangerous bugs aren't the loud ones.
So ones that crash the system.
Exactly.
Right.
A kernel panic or a loud crash gives you a stack trace. And you can debug a stack trace.
Right.
The truly terrifying bugs are the ones that silently feed the AI empty data.
Mm.
It allows the inference engine to just keep driving, completely oblivious to the fact that it is completely disconnected from its grounding truth.
I really want to dig into the mechanics of that silence, because that is the inciting incident of these audit files we're looking at today. It's referred to as the number 34 hash refactor.
The 15 silent victim scenario?
Yeah, exactly. On paper, the audit describes a 5-second schema migration, just a standard refactoring of the knowledge object database, or the KODB. Peti ran an alter table command to drop a single column.
The provenance column, I think.
Right, the provenance column from
yeah.
the main facts table. And he moved that data into a new side table called fact provenance. So he's just normalizing the data structure. It took less than 200 milliseconds and 14 out of 14 tests passed.
So from his perspective, the dashboard was entirely green.
Exactly green.
The new logic, the fallback paths, the data migration itself, all of it was verified by the test suite that was written specifically for that migration. So locally, the deployment was totally flawless.
But I'm struggling with the logic of testing the new schema,
yeah.
but completely ignoring the downstream callers.
Yeah.
That feels like fixing the plumbing in your basement, but not checking if the upstairs faucets still have water.
That's a great analogy.
Right. Was this just developer fatigue, or is there some fundamental flaw in how CI/CD pipelines handle SQLite database migrations?
Well, it's actually a really pervasive blind spot in local database evolution. The test suite was written right alongside the migration script, so it was designed to prove that the new path worked.
Yeah.
It was definitely not designed to prove that the legacy ecosystem survived.
Okay, let's break down the actual fallout then, because for 30 hours after that migration, 15 downstream CLI tools, I think it was 12 RAID tools and one write tool, were just fundamentally broken.
And this wasn't some obscure corner of the repository either.
No, this included the entire model context protocol, the MCP tool stack, the exact stack that the Claude Code agent uses to read the vault.
And the mechanics of the failure are really rooted in how that MCP layer handles exceptions. So when the AI agent invoked a tool like Vault CoQuery or ToolStats, the underlying script executed a hard-coded SQL query.
A query asking for that dropped column.
Exactly. It was saying select provenance from facts.
But the provenance column had been dropped, so SQLite, being a strict relational database, hits that query and immediately throws an operational error. Like, no such column. It's a fatal exception at the database layer.
Right. But the problem is what happens next. The MCP layer acts as this bridge between the raw Python execution and the LLM's context window. It communicates via JSON RPC.
Oh, I see.
And if a tool crashes and burns there, it can completely destabilize the agent's active session. So to prevent that, the developer wrapped the database query in this really robust try except block.
Oh, no. So it caught the operational error.
It caught it, suppressed it, and then fell back to returning just an empty JSON array.
Literally just empty brackets. Yeah. Results.
Empty.
This is the part that just blows my mind. The database is screaming, hey, this column doesn't exist. And the MCP wrapper basically puts a hand over the database's mouth, turns back to the AI, and politely says, oh, I'm sorry, we just don't have any facts about that topic.
That is exactly what happened. And the agent, which is explicitly prompted to handle sparse knowledge vaults anyway, receives that empty array.
So it just thinks, oh, the user hasn't added this yet.
Right. It evaluates the empty payload, concludes there's no information, and then just proceeds to synthesize a response based on its baseline weights.
So it abandons the retrieved facts.
It transitions from RAG retrieval augmented generation straight into full-blown hallucination. And it does all of this without throwing a single warning flag to the user terminal.
Wow. Okay, so PD eventually catches this. He fixes the 15 scripts. He basically plays whack-a-mole, updates the SQL queries to join the new fact provenance table and the leading stamps.
Right. He patches the symptoms.
But he doesn't stop there, because patching the symptoms doesn't fix the underlying vulnerability in the pipeline. So the audit files show he built a systemic safety rail to catch the next time a schema changes. And his first attempt was, well, it was just a simple grep.
Yeah, a bare word text search across the code base for the string provenance.
And it failed miserably.
Oh, completely miserably. It triggered 46 false positives.
Yikes.
Because a bare word text search has absolutely zero syntactic awareness, you know. It flags the word provenance inside comments. It flags Python variable names like local provenance flag.
It probably flagged the name of the new table itself, right? Fact provenance.
Exactly. And if you tie your CI pipeline to a dumb string match like that, you end up with a pipeline that fails on literally every single commit. And developers will just bypass it because it's annoying.
You need a sensor that actually understands context, not just the letters, P-R-O-V-E-N-A-N-C-E, but the actual grammatical role those letters are playing in the code.
Right.
And that led to the creation of a new CLI tool, the Vault Schema Migration Victim Audit Tool.
That's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. But the documentation says it uses an AST per branch classifier and qualified reference matching.
Right.
Let's unpack the AST part first. How does an abstract syntax tree look at Python code differently than just a normal text search?
Well, when you use Python's built-in AST module, you aren't looking at the source code as lines of text anymore. The module parses the text and builds this this tree of nodes representing the logical structure of the program.
Okay.
It identifies function definitions, class structures, assignment operators, string literals.
So it's turning the raw text into kind of a grammatical diagram.
Exactly. And taking that a step further, the AST can actually differentiate between a name node, like a regular variable, and an attribute node, which represents a qualified property, like facts.provenance.
Oh, that's smart.
But the audit script actually goes even deeper, because many of these SQL queries are constructed as raw F strings in Python.
Right, just text blocks.
Yeah, so a standard Python AST parser sees a giant string node. It doesn't natively understand the SQL syntax hiding inside that string.
Ah, so you can't just ask the Python AST for a database column. It just says, hey, I found a string literal, that's all I know.
Right, which forces the audit tool to employ a hybrid approach. It parses the Python AST to locate all the database execution calls.
Like where the cursor executes.
Right, where cursor.execute or similar methods are invoked. And once it isolates the specific SQL string being passed to that execution node, it then runs a secondary qualified reference check specifically tuned for the SQL dialect.
Okay, so it looks for the dropped column in the context of table aliases. Like f.provenance.
Yes, or raw select provenance.
That is brilliant, yeah. Because that eliminates the false positives entirely. It completely ignores the variable names in the comments and lasers right in on the exact queries trying to fetch the ghost column.
It's a beautiful piece of engineering.
But, you know, a script is only useful if it actually runs. And the logs indicate he institutionalized this fix by chaining it to a Git precommit hook.
And this is where the enforcement layer is just brilliant. The script, specifically, it's called .git/hooks/precommit-schema-migration-watch.shesh.
Okay.
It intercepts the version control workflow at the exact moment PD tries to type git commit.
So before the code even makes it to the local branch.
Exactly. The bash script monitors the staging area. It checks if any of the staged files are architecture decision records, ADRs, or migration scripts that dictate a schema change.
And if it detects a schema change,
it pauses the commit process right there and executes the victim audit tool we just talked about.
And if the audit tool finds a single downstream script that is still calling the old deprecated schema,
the audit tool exits with a non-zero status code, and the bash script catches that exit code and physically aborts the git commit. It throws a fatal error in the terminal saying, you know, you cannot save your work until you update the legacy callers to match the new schema you just defined.
That is an absolute masterclass in defensive architecture. You are physically preventing developer fatigue from bypassing the safety check.
So you literally can't ignore it.
Exactly. So he builds this incredibly robust AST parsing git hook to fix his database problem. But what really fascinates me is that he doesn't just quietly commit this code and pretend the massive failure never happened.
Not at all.
He weaponizes the failure. He takes this massive 30-hour blind spot and uses it as the core pitch for his Hacker News launch.
Which is a profound shift in developer marketing strategy. The launch was scheduled for Tuesday, May 26, 2026 at 15:00 UTC. And PD laid out multiple angles for the show HN submission.
Right.
The generic approach, which he called option A, was the standard. Show HN, my self-improving AI vault repo.
And he immediately torpedoes his own idea.
Yeah.
He writes in his notes that I open sourced something 2 weeks ago and here's an update. It usually just gets buried in tier C.
Yeah, it's the digital equivalent of handing out a corporate brochure on the street. Nobody reads it.
It's exactly. The Hacker News community is hyper-vigilant against anything resembling corporate PR or, you know, unearned hype. If you claim to have revolutionized AI memory management, they will actively deconstruct your code base just to prove you wrong.
Oh, they love doing that. Yeah. So he pivots to option C2. He titles the submission, "One schema migration silently broke 15 CLI tools. Here's the safety rail."
He puts the failure right there in the headline.
By leading with a severe, embarrassing architectural failure, he immediately disarms the community's defensive skepticism. He isn't selling a utopian vision. He is sharing a postmortem.
That psychology is fascinating.
It really is. He acknowledges a universal pain point schema migrations breaking downstream consumers.
Wow.
Every senior engineer on that forum has lived through a version of that nightmare.
It provides immediate, actionable value. Like, even if the reader doesn't care about his AI vault at all, they care about how to write an AST parser to catch SQL anomalies in Python scripts.
Exactly. He's offering a reproducible playbook.
But opening yourself up like that, I mean, that invites the wolves.
Yeah.
The H in comment section is notoriously brutal.
Oh, he knew that. He anticipated the brutality. The audit files actually contain a matrix of pre-planned responses to the most likely cynical comments.
He treated the community pushback as a predictable system.
Yes. He wrote handling logic for the trolls.
Let's look at anticipated comment number one, because it's classic. Why didn't your tests catch this? That is the absolute first thing someone is going to type.
And his pre-planned response is totally devoid of defensive posturing. He just says, they did for the migration script itself. The downstream callers didn't have integration tests against the migrated DB. That's the gap. CI now runs the victim audit tool on every push.
He just concedes the architectural gap immediately and pivots to the structural solution.
That's perfect.
He also anticipated the tooling pedants. The guy saying, how is this different from a schema validation library like Pydanic?
And the response draws a hard technical boundary. Schema validation libs check schema shape at runtime. The CLI checks caller conformance to a documented schema change in an ADR at commit time. Different layer.
Boom. It proves competence. Can't fake that level of technical nuance.
Transparency builds far more trust than polished perfection ever could in those circles.
Absolutely. Speaking of competence, though, I want to pivot to the scale of what PD is actually building here. Let's look at the sub-agent fan-out scale, because the audit logs from this single developer read like the output of an entire mid-sized engineering team.
It's staggering. The logs detail a specific six-hour session where he needed to perform bulk modifications across 267 markdown files.
Okay, 267 files, what was he doing?
The objective was normalizing the front matter in skill files within the vault.
For listeners who haven't built complex markdown vaults, front matter is that YAML metadata block at the very top of the file. It contains the tags, the aliases, the creation dates.
Right, and normalizing it means ensuring every file adheres to a strict schema, correcting typos, merging duplicate tags.
Doing that manually across 267 files is just agonizing.
And doing it with a simple script requires writing incredibly complex edge case logic to handle malformed YAML without destroying the rest of the file.
So what's the AI approach?
Well, the traditional AI approach would be serial processing. You write a script that loops through the files, sends each file to the LLM API, waits for the response, writes the file, and moves to the next one.
One-to-one. A very slow, very expensive march.
Right. But PD circumvented the serial bottleneck entirely. The audit describes deploying 31 independent subagents across 5 parallel ways.
Wait, 31 subagents at once?
Yes. So the primary Claude Code agent acts as an orchestrator. It chunks the 267 files into batches and spawns parallel subprocesses.
Assigning a dedicated subagent to each batch with the explicit instruction to normalize the front matter.
Exactly. And the orchestrator handles the wave scheduling. It monitors the terminal resources to avoid overloading the local machine, waits for a wave of subagents to complete their file system writes, verifies the output, and then triggers the next wave.
And in that six-hour window,
22 complex bash tasks landed perfectly.
Think of the Claude API like taking a taxi. Every mile you drive, every token you process, the meter ticks up. Normalizing 267 files with large context windows over the raw API would drain a developer budget rapidly.
Oh, absolutely.
But what PD did by routing this fan out through his active authenticated Claude Code terminal session is like buying a monthly subway pass. He didn't just hop on the train. He figured out how to cram 31 pieces of luggage onto the same subway car during a single trip.
Because the infrastructure access is already paid for via the flat rate subscription.
Exactly.
So the marginal cost of spawning one more subagent to handle one more batch of files is $0. He isn't pinging the raw messages endpoint and paying per token. He is leveraging the UI CLI layer of the service.
And when your marginal cost of compute drops to zero, the whole engineering paradigm shifts. You stop optimizing for token efficiency, and you start optimizing purely for massive parallelization and clock time reduction.
You essentially have an infinite workforce of highly capable junior developers.
But, you know, that introduces a terrifying variable, quality control.
Yeah.
If you have 31 subagents furiously rewriting the metadata of your entire knowledge base, how do you ensure they aren't just slowly corrupting your data?
And this brings us to the B8 RSI critic production flip.
Yes, let's talk about the critic. RSI stands for recursive self-improvement. The AI evaluates the AI.
Right. In the autonomous agent space, removing human oversight from the data validation loop is the ultimate objective. PD built the B8 critic module to serve as the final gatekeeper.
So what exactly is its job?
Its job is to analyze the extracted facts and insights generated by all the other subagents and judge whether they are factual, novel, and durable enough to be committed to the permanent SQLite database.
But relying on an LLM to judge an LLM is fraught with bias issues. Like, how did he empirically prove that the B8 critic wasn't just rubber stamping garbage data?
Well, the audit files show a really rigorous statistical evaluation using a metric called Cohen's Kappa.
Cohen's Kappa.
Yeah. It is a statistical measure of inter-rater reliability. It evaluates how often two independent judges agree on a binary categorization, in this case, accept or reject.
Okay, but how do we actually calculate this kappa? Because it's not just a straight percentage of agreement, right? I mean, a monkey flipping a coin will agree with you 50% of the time just by pure chance.
That is the crucial distinction of Cohen's kappa. It actively accounts for the probability of random agreement. The formula is the observed probability of agreement minus the probability of expected agreement, all divided by 1 minus the probability of expected agreement.
Okay, let's ground that in the actual test PD ran. So he created a clean baseline of 100 extracted knowledge bullets, and he then built a deterministic human-coded evaluation script. This script used rigid heuristics and regular expressions regex to judge the bullets.
Exactly. So the human-coded baseline evaluated the 100 bullets and determined that 60 should be passed and 40 should be failed based on the presence of specific syntactical markers.
And then PD ran the B8 critic AI judge over the exact same 100 bullets.
And the AI had absolutely no knowledge of the human baseline's decisions.
Right. And the initial run yielded a Cohen's kappa of 0.708.
Which is really good. According to the Landeskog scale for interpreting kappa values, anything between 0.61 and 0.80 represents substantial agreement.
So the AI judge in the deterministic baseline agreed roughly 86% of the time.
Yeah. And in many engineering environments, a 0.7 kappa on an LLM evaluator is considered a massive success. The feature would just be immediately shipped to production.
But PD didn't just ship it. He dug into the 14% where they disagreed. Specifically, he isolated the 10 items flagged as false accepts.
Right.
These were 10 knowledge bullets where the AI critic said, this is a great fact, save it. But the human-coded rejects baseline screamed, reject, this is garbage.
So he initiated a manual human-in-the-loop inspection of those 10 isolated bullets. And the result of that inspection completely inverted the narrative of the test.
Oh, this is the best part.
All 10 of the supposed false accepts were, in fact, highly valuable, durable insights.
The AI was right. And the rigid human baseline was wrong. But why did the baseline fail them in the first place?
The baseline was built on a fundamental misunderstanding of what constitutes noise. The audit actually calls this the mining noise revelation.
Mining noise.
Yeah. The human rejects was programmed to mercilessly fail any bullet that contained artifacts of conversational text. For example, if a bullet contained the Hungarian phrase "ma is," which translates to "even today," the rejects flagged it as conversational fluff and killed it.
Oh.
Or if it contained a timestamp format like HH:MM or fragments of an IP address, the rejects assumed it was just ephemeral log data and killed it.
But the BA critic isn't just matching tokens, it's mapping semantic vectors. It read the bullet with the IP address, recognized that the bullet was describing a durable permanent architectural pattern for local network routing, and determined that the IP fragment was necessary context. Not just ephemeral noise.
Exactly. The rigid deterministic system collapsed under the weight of semantic nuance.
Wow.
When PD realized the AI had correctly identified the value in all 10 of these edge cases, he had to recalculate the ground truth. The AI's false accept rate dropped to approximately 0%.
It wasn't letting garbage through. The baseline was mischaracterizing gold as garbage.
And when you recalculate Cohen's kappa with that corrected ground truth, the revised kappa shoots past 0.85.
That's incredible.
A kappa over 0.81 is categorized as almost perfect agreement. The AI wasn't just agreeing with the human intent. It was outperforming the human's ability to codify that intent in rejects.
And based on that overwhelming statistical proof, the production flip was officially ratified. The B8 critic was approved to act as the autonomous judge.
But this is where the discipline of the developer truly shines. He didn't just flip the switch and go to sleep.
No, the audit logs reveal a massive layer of restraint regarding what is still gated from production. The system is ratified, sure, but the autonomous apply mode is heavily time gated. The audit explicitly states that the environment variable vault critic active equals 1 will not go live until week 23, which is June 1st through June 7th.
He's forcing the system into a 2-week shadow monitoring phase.
Right. The B8 critic is actively running in the background. It evaluates every extracted fact, makes its judgment, and writes that judgment to a log file called criticreviewlog.jsonall. However, the execution path that actually writes the accepted facts to the production database remains disconnected. The data still requires PD's manual approval to enter the vault.
So it's an enforced probationary period.
Mm-hmm.
And he enforces it structurally. He didn't just leave a comment in the code saying, hey, don't turn this on yet.
Yeah.
The architecture relies on an environment flag, vault critic active equals 0.
Yes.
He has script level execution blocks that call sys.exit if the environment flag is manipulated improperly. He even has git precommit hooks that scan for unauthorized changes to the safety logic itself.
He is treating the autonomous RSI loop with the exact same caution one would treat a destructive database migration.
It's so smart.
But, you know, the BIT critic isn't the only feature being held back. The audit logs also detail a profound failure in a separate extraction stack, specifically revolving around a vocabulary mismatch.
Yes, let's get into this. He has two different systems trying to extract knowledge graph data. One feeds into MemGraph, which is a high-performance graph database. The other system is a tool called Graphify.
Right.
And he needs to merge their outputs, which means they need to speak the exact same language. If MemGraph calls an entity a subagent, and Graphify calls the exact same entity an autonomous script, the graph database can't link the nodes.
To quantify this vocabulary overlap, he implements the Jaccard index.
The Jaccard index.
Yeah, it is a fundamental statistic used in set theory to measure the similarity of two sets. You take the size of the intersection, which is the terms they share, and you divide it by the size of the union, the total unique terms across both sets.
So a score of 1.0 means they're using the exact same vocabulary. A score of 0 means they share absolutely nothing. And PD set his acceptance gate at a Jaccard index of greater than or equal to 0.05.
That is a remarkably low threshold, merely a 5% overlap. Yet the current extraction architecture is completely failing to clear it.
Wow.
The audit logs show the system is stuck at a Jaccard index of 0.00000, less than 1% of their vocabularies overlap.
That is wild. Why is the semantic drift so extreme? You'd think a simple prompt update to the LM saying, you know, use this specific list of words would fix it.
You would think so, but the developer notes address that exact assumption. The logs explicitly state that pure prompt tightening won't fix the issue.
Really?
Yeah. The underlying pathology is what he calls an orthogonal vocabulary problem. The two extraction stacks operate on fundamentally different conceptual paradigms.
Okay, how so?
Well, one stack is designed to look at the structural components of the codebase functions, classes, dependencies. The other stack is analyzing the semantic abstract learnings contained in the markdown notes.
Oh, I see. They're looking at a house from completely different dimensions. One is mapping the plumbing, the other is evaluating the interior design. You can't just prompt the plumber to use interior design vocabulary. The underlying data structures don't map to each other.
Exactly. And because the failure is architectural, the proposed solutions have to be architectural. The audit outlines two major unreleased designs slated for Sprint 2 integration.
Let's talk about the first one, the Option B Tree Sitter pre-pass design. I really want to focus on Tree Sitter because it's a brilliant application of deterministic tooling to constrain non-deterministic AI. How does a Tree Sitter pre-pass solve a vocabulary drift?
So Tree Sitter is an incremental parsing tool that builds incredibly precise, concrete syntax trees for source files. Unlike the Python AST we discussed earlier, Tree Sitter is built for high-speed, language-agnostic structural mapping.
So before the LLM is even allowed to look at the code and start, you know, hallucinating entity names, Tree Sitter does a deterministic sweep.
Right. It creates a strict, inflexible baseline vocabulary of every single class, function, and variable in the repository.
Okay. And then what?
When the LLM extraction phase finally executes, its output space is structurally constrained. It is forced to map its semantic findings onto the rigid syntax tree generated by Tree Sitter.
It eliminates the LLM's freedom to just invent new terminology for existing structural components.
Exactly. It anchors the AI's creativity to a concrete architectural map.
That is so elegant. And what's the second proposed solution?
The second is the B1 NLI Ensemble ADR. NLI stands for Natural Language Inference.
Okay.
This attacks the problem from the opposite end. If you cannot force the two systems to use the exact same string of text, you introduce a middle layer model whose sole purpose is to determine logical entailment.
Logical entailment. Meaning what exactly?
Meaning, if MemGraph outputs subagent and Graphify outputs autonomous script, the NLI model analyzes the contextual relationship. It determines with high confidence that subagent entails autonomous script within this specific repository. It effectively aliases the terms on the fly.
Ah, allowing the graph merge to proceed despite the literal string mismatch.
Yes, exactly.
The technical depth here is just staggering. But honestly, what stands out the most to me is the restraint. He has these incredibly complex solutions designed, but they are clearly marked as unreleased. The Jaccard gate failed, so the feature does not ship.
It's refreshing. In an ecosystem dominated by founders shipping broken prototypes and just calling them beta, watching a developer hold the line on a 0.05 index threshold is deeply reassuring.
It reflects an engineering maturity that prioritizes structural integrity over feature velocity.
Right.
And the entire version 1.0.1 audit is really a testament to that philosophy.
It really is. I mean, we started this dive looking at a 30-hour silent failure caused by a dropped database column.
Right. We explored how the JSON RPC layer swallowed the Squilight error, leaving the AI completely blind.
And then we examined the architectural response, abandoning simple text grep in favor of an AST per branch classifier.
And enforcing that audit through a git pre-commit bash script that physically aborts dangerous commits.
We analyzed the brilliant Hacker News C2 marketing angle, leading with the 15 broken tools to immediately establish engineering credibility and bypass community skepticism.
We broke down the economics of subagent fanout, demonstrating how leveraging active terminal sessions allows for zero marginal cost parallelization, deploying 31 agents across 5 waves to normalize hundreds of files.
We took a deep dive into the B8 RSI Critics production flip, walking through the Cohen's Kappa calculation and the realization that the AI's semantic vector mapping vastly outperformed the human-coded rejects baseline,
driving the false accept rate to near zero.
And we concluded with the rigorous gating mechanisms, the environment flags keeping the credit in shadow mode, and the Tree Sitter and NLI architectural proposals waiting in Sprint 2 because the Jaccard index refused to clear 0.05.
This entire audit file is a blueprint for the next decade of software engineering. It really forces us to ask deeply uncomfortable questions about the systems we trust every single day.
It absolutely does.
If your organization relies on AI agents to read your internal databases, you know, your customer records, your financial wikis, your operational telemetry, and a database administrator refactors a table tomorrow morning, what happens?
That is the million-dollar question.
Does your AI throw a loud, fatal error, halting operations until the mismatch is resolved? Or does it hit an exception wrapper, quietly accept an empty array, and confidently begin hallucinating a reality based on absolute zero? How confident are you right now in the wiring of your system's check engine light?
Because if you don't know exactly how your exception handling interacts with your LLM context windows, you are likely already living in your own 30-hour blind spot.
And the silent failures are always the ones that cost you the most. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.